There is trouble in paradise. The government parties have fallen out with each other.
Now, we're only a year and a half in government.
In
terms of this arrangement.
There's constant charge against me. It's been because he has no case against us when it comes to subs.
5 to 9.
My charge against him is he's obsessed with innuendo and conspiracy theories.
It's not good enough to just pass the buck. There is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and ultimately somebody has to bear responsibility.
Yeah, we're in the Houses of Parliament on national television.
Hello and welcome again to Your Politics podcast. And what a day this Thursday is turning out to be. What a weekend lies ahead. In our Doyle studio, I'm joined by Mary Regan and Micheál Lehane from our political team. And also from Brussels, we're delighted to be joined by the Brussels correspondent of Euronews, Shona Murray. And Shona, it has been some day, hasn't it, this first day of the European Council.
Brussels is breathing a sigh of relief, actually. I think people are still in disbelief, and they'll remain so until Saturday, until there's a resolution or not in the House of Commons. We've been here so many times before. I think Brussels, as well as the UK and people in Ireland, are a bit traumatised by Brexit. Everything else in the EU has been on hold, almost paralysed because of Brexit. And on so many occasions, there's been levels of political euphoria because they've managed to believe that the impossibility, the colliding objectives of Brexit have actually been solved. And about this time last year, the withdrawal agreement was published with the UK-wide backstop, and they thought that was it solved. And here we are again. I mean, I think also because of, you know, it's been such a roller coaster. If you think about it, just a week ago, there was no hope of even an engagement between Boris Johnson and the UK. And then he's conceded on so many areas, and the EU has conceded too. But listening to the voices from the House of Commons, the Remainers who want a second referendum, the DUP or are still adamantly against it, there's another real realisation that, again, the problem won't be solved because there is no consensus on Brexit.
Yeah, I kept thinking of Winston Churchill, whom Boris Johnson is so fond of. You know, this is very far, even if all of this works and it's a very far from done deal. This is not the beginning of the end. It is really only possibly the end of the beginning. The big question is, they have a plan, how Boris avoids becoming Theresa May all over again.
Yeah, that is the huge question. Everybody is endorsing, will likely endorse this plan because, of course, it's really just a re-engineering of the Irish protocol, the protocol in Northern Ireland with the withdrawal agreement. There is a revised political declaration as well. But essentially, you know, the European Union can say that it has its commitment to protecting the single market and the customs union has prevailed. Now, we have to be clear as well, though, they have gone ahead with this customs partnership, which they said will make the single market quite vulnerable, but they're willing to take a risk for peace, as Michel Barnier said today. But whether or not anybody can see it passing, you know, that's the question on everybody's lips right now.
And maybe some hint of the pressure. Was it Jean-Claude Juncker saying no prolongation, which would mean the Parliament may not get the extension that the opposition are hoping to force on Mr. Johnson? Are they trying to, if you like, heap up the pressure on Parliament to finally back something, even if they can only agree on what they don't agree on?
That's literally only what Jean-Claude Juncker was doing there. I think he's relying, unfortunately, on the fact that in the UK there's a lot of misinformation and people aren't too au fait with how the EU works. And I think, unfortunately, we've seen that throughout this whole Brexit process. You know, his point standing beside Boris Johnson today saying there's no need for prolongation. He wasn't in any way saying we would deny or reject any proposal for an extension. He was just saying there's no need for one, I suppose, in support of Boris Johnson. But there's no way that the Commission is in a position to do it. It's not within its gift. And I know it's almost a misnomer. There's no way there'll be a member state within the EU27 that would deny the UK, after all of this painstaking negotiations, that would deny the UK an extension if it were to come to that. And not just deny the UK, as in Boris Johnson, but all the MPs in the House of Commons who have done their best, who have pledged, who have, you know, sacrificed their careers in some way well, at least when you look at the 21 rebels in the Conservative Party, to protect the UK from no deal. And of course, no deal is very harmful to the EU as well. So it's a non-starter that that anybody would deny the UK an extension if it was Cresswood to come in.
And Micheál Lehan, there's been very, very carefully calibrated reactions, both from the Taoiseach at the Council and from Tánaiste to Simon Coveney here in Dublin. Many a slip and many a word could unravel things even further.
Yeah, it's cautious enough, isn't it? I mean, and they do say, yes, it is a new deal, but it's a new deal that isn't going to go any further. They'll talk to any northern parties, but don't pretend that this deal can be in any way altered. And they say the backstop, the one thing, that the big line that we thought wouldn't be crossed, well, yes, it has been revised, but all its objectives initially, which were preserving the Good Friday Agreement, avoiding a hard border, maintaining north-south, the economy, and preserving and the integrity of the single market, all of that was achieved. But I suppose we still saw things happening that we didn't think could happen even 8-9 days ago. That is a revised backstop and bilateral negotiations taking place. And from an Irish government perspective, it's been handled well at many levels. And I think the most important one that Leo Varadkar will look to is that no commentator across Europe has uttered the words that Ireland has caved in on anything. So from that point of view, if things were to go at a successful way from an Irish perspective on Saturday, well, then that would be a political triumph.
But Mary Regan, you can see on the face of it, and we've only had an initial chance to look at this deal, why the DUP has the objections that it has. It no say-so for Northern Ireland as to whether to opt into the new arrangements which they wanted, and then a simple majority. And again, this question to be raised every 4 years. So they're afraid it's a 4-year slippery slope towards an effective United Ireland.
Yeah, and I don't think people here really thought that the DUP would go as far as they did. Maybe this afternoon there was some expectation that maybe they were just playing a game of bluff here, and that ultimately they might accept what was coming. But that is no longer the case. And Simon Coveney was asked in the Dáil if he can keep those lines of communications open, if he can in any way persuade the DUP or talk to them. But he was saying, you know, this isn't our job. It's over. The deal is not for changing. He was very emphatic about that, as Micheál said, and saying it's now up to the British government to get this through Parliament. It's not something that we're going to interfere in here.
And what reaction there in Brussels shown? The DUP as well in their statement this lunchtime, very much saying, you know, this is only the start of what will be the process of the withdrawal agreement. So hinting that there could be trouble to come even beyond Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in Brussels, I suppose, you know, member states in Brussels are kind of used to things like this cropping up when it comes to negotiations, because you're dealing with a bloc of 28 member states. So there's always going to be one country or two or three countries who have issues. And remember, there was the CETA, the Canadian Free Trade Agreement, a couple of years ago was held up by the Wallonians. But absolutely, this could be the start of some problems ahead when it comes to the political declaration or the free trade agreements that, you know, we'll see. But I think people believe that this issue of the Good Friday Agreement, maintaining that and getting the UK out of the EU in an orderly way, was such a sticky situation. So if they can overcome that, then the free trade stuff evolves probably a bit clearer.
Yeah, Michel Barnier, he certainly had to have his patience tested. He's a patient man over the last long 3 years. You could hear the relief in his voice. What would you say is the... And again, it's very far from a done deal. We could still be looking at extension and election as the least worst outcome from all of this. What's the view of Ireland and Irish diplomacy in all of this? There was a piece in the Irish Times during the week from Lara Marlow about a very flattering view from the Elysee Palace of the Taoiseach and the team here.
Yeah, I think that's been a consensus for some time now, actually, since the start of the Brexit process, mainly because Enda Kenny, of course, right at the start, made sure that the Good Friday Agreement was the top of the agenda, the sequencing of how the Brexit negotiations were beginning, you know, that the top three issues would be the citizens' rights, the financial settlement, and the Good Friday Agreement, all three of those priorities interlinked. I think that was a real achievement from the get-go, because if you recall, the British at the time said, no, we'll deal with the Good Friday Agreement down the end of it, when we have our free trade agreement negotiated, because that way we'll know that we won't have to have borders because we'll have such a close relationship. And the Irish said no, because what will happen is once we have all the free trade agreement negotiated, Ireland will be told, look, you're going to have to give up. We've gotten to this point now, and we can't mm-hmm. hold back just for the Good Friday Agreement. So that was an achievement. But actually, the Irish, I suppose, are well known in Brussels for having quite good diplomatic skills. If you even recall our bailout days as well, there was quite some quite good interventions by the Irish team. And then, the Irish Sherpa, John Callanan, of course, he was instrumental in creating the backstop back in 2017. And also, not only that, think about the amount of people you've heard in Poland, in Hungary, in Spain, talk about the Good Friday Agreement, border-free on the island of Ireland, not going back to hard infrastructure. These people, and rightly so, would not have been, closely conscious about the Good Friday Agreement until now because of Irish diplomacy, whether it's Simon Coveney, Leo Varadkar, Helen McEntee. And think about the number of people, of diplomats, of senators, of chancellors who have visited the border in the past year or so. Delegations of journalists, of politicians from every different hue have been and taken photos and selfies at the border. So it's actually, yes, you can definitely say, objectively speaking, that it was a triumph for diplomacy when at the same time the British were trying to go from city to city to stop the sort of unity of the European Union, and it just didn't work. The unity remained at a time when the EU was actually quite fragmented. One thing that was resilient was the unity to protect Ireland. I suppose there was an underdog element as well. Ireland, the old colonising, empire, and protecting, the small country, the member state that was staying, the member state that holds its membership of the European Union in high regard, and the smaller country. And of course, the EU is made up of small countries. So I think there was a lot of elements, but certainly it was a success from a diplomatic perspective too.
But much and all, as they love us, they really want this Brexit business over. Coverage, they really want to move on.
You can understand this. There are so many serious issues that really are going to come for very soon and going to be quite vicious. When it comes to the behaviour of Viktor Orban in Hungary, the peace party in Poland, the rule of law, that fragmentation I was talking about, the influence of Russia, Brexit as a whole, and why did it happen? Turkey, Erdogan, and his position where he's, the refugee deal might fall apart. He said he's going to send all the refugees back to the European Union. So you'll have, probably the refugee crisis back to the forefront of discussion. And then you could have, groups, parties have been in the member states with the rise of far right on this issue. So there are, Brexit has probably put a plaster maybe over some of these issues, but at the same time they are festering, and the EU needs to get on with that work.
All right, Seana, thanks a million for joining us this afternoon with the latest from Brussels. And Micheál, let's get back to that triumph of Irish diplomacy. And again, we don't know how this is going to turn out, and it's very far from certain. But the credit that Team Leo, Team Coveney get for the green jersey and the work for Ireland.
Yeah, and I think the other point was that all the kind of bets that were out there on the other side, that there was going to be last minute pressure and that the solidarity would fail at the very last minute, none of that stuff happened or didn't come true. And those who are of a slightly more optimistic bent would say, for those reasons, you look to Saturday's vote. And if none of the other bets came in, that mm-hmm. could lead to increased pressure on Saturday and focus certain minds who might be thinking in other directions. I think what the opposition will focus on here, though, when it comes to the triumph, if we want to call it that, is that this was a collective at all points, that the confidence and supply agreement, and indeed beyond that, across the Dáil, there's been very little dissent on any major point mm-hmm. when it came to Brexit, and that you can't necessarily give all the credit to one side, and they will equally look to the permanent government, the civil service, as being key in this as well.
Yes, and indeed, as Seana was pointing out there, a huge amount of work has gone in from civil servants and diplomats behind the scenes. That's one thing I've noticed recently, Mary. You'll be talking to politicians here and they'll go, well, compared with Westminster, everybody used to say we were nothing compared to them, and now we're shining lights. And you'll hear that from politicians of all parties.
Definitely a degree of smugness as they watch the chaos unfolding on various turns throughout the process in Westminster. But, you know, I do recall actually more than a thousand days ago now, but it feels like a thousand years ago in the Brexit process, the morning after the referendum, Micheál Martin held his doorstep there out in the portico of Leinster House. And at that point, he did, you know, commit to supporting the government. Enda Kenny was a Taoiseach at the day throughout this process. So, you know, I think there was that, you know, the cooperation from the Dáil here. At no point did it appear that there was, you know, big divisions or any party majorly against the government's Brexit strategy, while they did have, you know, issues with various, you know, levels of preparation, etc. So I think that has been a marked feature of this. And again, in the Dáil this morning in Leaders' Questions, just an hour after this deal was brokered or announced, very much, you know, messages of appreciation for the civil service, for the people involved and the people who had put so much into this.
Before we talk about the issue of politicians insist that they're not thinking about, which is the timing of a general election, David Murphy, who has slipped into the chair here in our Dáil studio, just let's reflect for a minute more on the position of the DUP. They're really in a corner. The May deal now looks far better than the Boris Johnson deal. They rejected the May deal. They've rejected the Johnson deal. Where do they go?
Well, I think if you look at the DUP, I mean, many people would argue their politics is the politics of no, of continually rejecting and trying to get a harder deal, particularly at the last moments when they feel that people are under pressure. The situation has now changed that basically the Boris bus has left the station and they're not on it. And that's the difficulty they face. Perhaps they thought they might get a last minute concession woven into the deal. But to a certain extent, it was interesting to see how Arlene Foster, how her language changed during the week. At one point, she seemed to be open to what was going on, particularly in her interview on the 6-1 News, as she seemed to be open to the kind of diplomacy that Boris Johnson was engaged in. And then this morning, we had that statement saying that they weren't happy when the deal came out. They reiterated that they weren't happy again. So maybe something changed within the DUP. Maybe the hardliners got the upper hand, but they're in a tight spot.
They are in a tight spot. And what kind of spot are we in terms of a general election, Micheál? Because officially, you know, politicians will tell you it's the last thing on their minds.
Yeah, but it's the only thing on their mind, really. And that has continued today. It's ebbed and flowed all week. But the type of people who were saying that there was really no chance of this happening in November, a lot of them have suddenly can't see the logic in not going in November now. That has been a marked shift, and that's happened at the highest levels within the government, I understand. Also, the sense the more people at a different level are having things and experiencing things like the Leaving Cert Dream, that stress of not being ready, and suddenly you're reliving that particular ordeal. That has happened to more than one person, apparently, in recent times. And there has been a lot of ordering of constituency literature, posters, all that stuff has happened in the last few days.
All a raglan and a hagla.
Yeah, yeah. And you saw too in the cabinet meeting, whether it was coincidence or not, but I don't think it is coincidence, really. Those two massive road projects, one in Mayo, the N5, the Castlebar to Westport Road, signed off on by Cabinet, over €200 million. And then something we didn't realise after Cabinet at all, mysteriously Michael Creed had news on Twitter last night that the Macroom Bypass, another €200 million long-awaited project, is ready to rock. And that Cabinet also signed off on that one. Mm-hmm. They are two big things that if you were having a November election, well, the timing is perfect.
Whatever the Brexit glow, though, how quickly would it turn to health, housing, economy? All those old issues.
Very fast. It was just interesting looking at the agenda for the Dáil today. Last weekend at the Fianna Fáil President's Dinner, we had Micheál Martin saying, if Leo Varadkar goes ahead now and calls an election in November, we won't have the scrutiny of legislation like the social welfare bill. But when you look at the Dáil agenda today, hey presto, the social welfare bill is going to be done and dusted in it. And I think it already is going through the Dáil right now. So those things are being wrapped up very quickly. You can see the agenda is quite light. And perhaps that's down to the fact that they were preparing for Brexit, and a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of that legislation is over with. But there's no massive piece of legislation that's coming down the track where you'd have to say, oh, well, look, they can't have an election before they get that done and dusted. Really, the finance bill is the main thing coming, and it's going to be a fairly simple finance bill because we'd a very moderate, small budget.
There is one thing, though, if for an argument for May, that if Leo Varadkar stayed on until May, he would overtake a good few other former Taoiseach in years served. And that could be an incentive. Legislation-wise, there doesn't seem to be very much. It's hard to know when you think the poor old senators have no work to do. They're not even here at all today because there's no work going into the Shannon to be done. But I presume stuff could be found if there was an incentive to keep going. But it's hard to see when you look at the gear shift, the real pronounced niggle, proper niggle between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar in two exchanges in the Dáil this week, one on disability and one on the death of the homeless man, Timothy Horahan, in Cork. There was a ferocity to that that we haven't seen. That would have to heal very quickly if you were to keep the show on the road for a bit longer.
Although I was talking to one veteran of this place today, and he was telling me a story that an old Fianna Fáiler had told him back in Charlie Haughey's time. And it was that, you know, that you get the all these people, well, the lads, it was the lads in those days. You get these lads coming in the door and they'd be banging on the desk and they'd be going, now's the time to go, boss. Now's the time to go. But he says, there's only one person who can make that call. There's only one question they have to ask themselves. What are my chances if I call the election of still being in this chair in 3 months' time? That's a different question, isn't it, Mary?
Yeah, and what a question it is for Leo Varadkar to have to grapple with. And there is, you know, some focus on the previous elections where Fine Gael called it wrong and where Enda Kenny perhaps should have called the election in 2015, late in November, but held out the new year because that's what the Labour Party wanted. You know, I think ultimately, I think that's a bit of a simplistic argument to make. You know, a lot of that campaign came down to other issues that emerged during the campaign, as well as a poor, you know, campaign slogan that they had. You know, and, you know, I think Leo Varadkar will be weighing that up. I think there are many here who think the logic for holding an election sooner rather than later is pretty compelling. And this is his one big, you know, it's his one big gamble, and he's going to have to get it right.
Even though he is cautious, I mean, typically Leo Varadkar, instinctive in some of the his reactions, but ultimately quite cautious. And his big cautious building of himself to become leader, that was very strategic, and it was done over a period of time. So that caution is there. Also, I mean, I think Fine Gael have a rough plan, a plan, of course, that may fall to shreds on the first day of the campaign as to how this will go. They think there may be a Brexit bounce if they were to go early. They're basing that on after the Francis Fitzgerald resignation and the polls were low, that suddenly the bulletproof guarantees that were delivered soon after on Brexit, that saw a big lift in the polls, that you'd have that for the first few days. Then you would quite quickly get into housing and health and the difficulties, and you could have 10 very difficult, sticky days. And then you're coming into the final week of what would be a short campaign, and that it would be back to the economy. And that's when the teacher keeps making this curious comment about we can win this, but you won't see it until the final 7 days. They think that's back to an economic argument, and hey presto, they have their prudence back as well. So on that front, they think they would have a good run into the final day.
Who knows? We don't know. We can only give you the benefit of what we've been able to see and hear around this place this Thursday. Thank you to Jack Good on production. And if you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe and leave a review. Also, tune in to Brexit Republic Essential Listening this weekend. Goodbye.